Last week, what did we talk about?
Very good. Church. I'm bored. Remember? What do you need to know about church? You weren't here, you're breaking my heart. But at least you're sitting up front, so that gets a big plus. Who can tell me the number one thing you need to know about insurance that's going to be at the final? What does insurance do?
Equalizes the risk.
Bingo! Tim? Awesome! Spreads the risk of loss.
You collectively jump in a pool together.
It's a pool of money, not of water. And you spread the risk of loss.
So when you buy that car insurance from that little lizard, you and all your friends who buy it with you underwrite each other. So if one of you gets in an accident, that amount of money that costs you in the accident can be paid for instead of having to write that whole check out yourself. We talked about what insurance is. Remember, spreads the risk of loss. Tim, you're awesome. Thank you. That will be on the final. When you spread the risk of loss, we talked about the history of insurance. Anybody remember where it first started?
Charleston.
Sorry?
In the United States.
Charleston, very good for the United States. Yes, it did. Charleston, South Carolina. And why did it start in Charleston? Man, you're awesome. You're making me feel so good. Why did it start in Charleston? I don't mean to put you on the thing. That was really good in. It started in Charleston because they were a big port. They did a lot of shipping. Anybody ever see the movie The Patriot? Mel Gibson? It was actually a fictitious person. It's based on a guy with the nickname the Swamp Fox. But it wasn't really true to life. But he was based in Charleston. One of the scenes in the movie was all the ships that were coming in. I don't know, you ever see the movie? No? Pretty good. My daughter likes it because he's got Heath Ledger. She thinks he's handsome.
Sorry, what?
She's not around anymore, sadly. She likes him on film, nonetheless.
Okay. My oldest daughter likes all these really sappy movies. She brings me to all these Nicholas Sparks movies.
Hey, Nicholas Sparks is awesome.
So my daughter says.
The only thing that I don't like movies that make me sad. And in every Nicholas Sparks movie, somebody dies. Makes me really sad. I mean, every one that I've gone to. And I mean, they're chick flicks anyway. So, I mean, I really have a... It's like a... You have to go to them. I have a three-part test for movies. You know what it is? Very easy. Can you guess what one of them is? What do you think you like in a movie? Comedy? Comedy's good, but that's not part of my three-part test.
Action?
Well, what is specific?
Explosions.
Explosions! Or gunfire, either one, they can kind of, you know, you can kind of, like, replace either one. That's one of them. Number two is car chases. I like that. Now, that, too, can have the substitution of people, like, having boat chase or something like that in James Bond. Airplanes, like in Top Gun, that's okay, too. Okay? And the third thing is why my daughter likes Heath Ledger. I like attractive women. Not much on Heath, I'm sure he's a fine young man. Oh, was. That's my three-part test. I know Cisco and Ebert are not, but I'll go to the system. There. I digress. I'm sorry. Insurable interest. You have to have an interest in that thing you're insuring. Why? Think about it for a second. It's pretty. Why do you have to have an interest?
Protecting
be able to write a life insurance policy under it?
No.
Isn't
it that last time?
Why not? You don't want an incentive to have you be knocked off, right? That's not a good thing, is it? Okay? You don't want that. So you have to have an interest. So it's a pretty good idea if you love the person or at least kind of like them or have a situation where they're your business partner, that you'll sustain some kind of loss in order to have that insurance. You don't want to have an insurance policy on your worst enemy and say, please die. Not a good public policy, okay? Similarly, I shouldn't be able to insure the loss on your house. Why? For the same reasons, right? I shouldn't want your house to burn down. It's your house, nice house. I don't want it to burn down, okay? Okay. What are the different types of insurance? You have health insurance, right? Insure your health, pay for your doctor bills. You have life insurance, what you don't want to have on someone who is not someone you love or care about. You have automobile insurance, which is known as property and casualty, same as on the house where I turn around and make sure it doesn't burn to the ground. All these different types of insurance, but they all do one thing, Tim. Awesome. Spread the risk of loss. Had to have out there. Had to finish the coffee. Okay. Spreads the risk of loss, right? Okay. Lastly, underwriting. That's how you actuarially determine how much the policy costs. If I'm an old, unhealthy, overweight smoker who likes to drink and engage in all kinds of risky behavior, I'm not such a good risk as opposed to a triathlete who is also a priest. Okay? That person is going to be a far better risk. The little old lady who drives back and forth to the store, drives 5 miles an hour, is not the same risk behind the wheel as a young man who decides that he wants to test out the freeway for the Indianapolis 500. Okay? So the way, it's under experience rating, the person who is the greater risk pays the higher premium. Because, Tim, you want to spread the risk of loss, right? So a person who's a greater risk should have to pay it, right? Okay. That's it for insurance. And what do you need to know for the final?
Insurance.
Spreads the risk of loss. All right, we're getting there. Okay. Tonight, we're going to talk about bankruptcy. Bankruptcy, in a lot of ways, is sad. But kind of like those Nicholas Sparks movies, they all have a bright ending in the end. Because the whole purpose of bankruptcy is to rehabilitate that debtor. It's not to turn around and say you're a bankrupt person, make them wear a big B around themselves. What it is it tries to rehabilitate them, gets rid of or crams down their debts, and we'll talk about that. And it gives them a fresh start. Okay. We're going to talk about the history of bankruptcy. We're going to talk about its administration, how it works. It's all about the parties. And there's two parties to a bankruptcy. Anybody tell me who they are? Who are the two? Yes.
Creditor.
Can be more than one, though, right?
Absolutely, yeah, creditors.
So, creditor or creditors. And who's the other one? And what's his name? What do they call?
Debtor.
The person who owes the money and the people to whom the money is owed. Very simple. Okay? one side of the credit card and the other. Okay? It's the person who owes the money and the persons to whom the money is owed. There's different types of bankruptcies. Bankruptcies depend on who the parties are. You have five different types of bankruptcies. And bankruptcies all under federal law. There is a state common law bankruptcy, but it's all superseded by federal law. How come? Anybody know? We'll get to it. What's your guess up there in the blue? Why do you think it's in the federal law? Just take a gander. Just for giggles. Where do federal laws kind of come from usually? What does the president preserve, protect, and defend? Who said the Constitution? Awesome! Way to go. It's in the Constitution. The power for bankruptcy under federal law is right in Article 1, that's the powers of Congress, of the Constitution. The Constitution is set up for four articles. I'll digress just for a second, because it is kind of interesting. Article 1 is Congress. Article 2 is the President. Article 3 are the courts. Article 4 are local governments, the states, in this case. Okay? And in Article 1, it says Congress shall have the authority to deal with bankruptcies. Right in there. Kind of like Mama Leone sucks. Okay. We're going to talk about the bankruptcy case and how it's administered. And lastly, we're going to talk about discharge. We're going to talk about a new provision in the bankruptcy code in 2005. And some of the things that are non-dischargeable. Just a thing that might be near and dear to all your hearts. What is one very important item that you can't declare bankruptcy and have it written away?
Student loans.
Student loans are non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. Okay? So you can't get out from under them by declaring bankruptcy. Guess what? You declare bankruptcy, you still owe them. Okay? That's not the usual course. Okay. Move on. What is bankruptcy? As we said, it's Title 11 in the United States Code. It's a section of the law books under the federal code. Jurisdiction is conferred by the Constitution, as we said, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, which authorizes uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. Right in there. First federal bankruptcy law was passed right after the Constitution was adopted. The Constitution was ratified and started up in 1787. That's when the Constitutional Convention met. The first Congress took place in 1789. The first bankruptcy law passed in 1800, signed by the second president of the United States, John Adams. Okay? So they didn't waste a lot of time. A lot of moss didn't grow underneath their feet. They went right to work on it. Remember the parties involved in bankruptcy? Each party can be a person, a natural person, a human being, or they can be a corporation, because a corporation is an artificial person under the law. You like that about corporations. Okay. Okay. Let's move on. History of bankruptcy. What does Black say? It's a statutory procedure by which the insolvent... What does insolvent mean? Anybody tell me? Insolvent means you have no money. That the money you have in is less than the money going out. Okay? It doesn't mean you don't have any cash. It means your obligations are greater than your responsibilities. Okay? So it's where an insolvent debtor, person who owes money, obtains financial relief. It's a financial proceeding. And undergoes a judicially supervised, the judge oversees this, reorganization or liquidation of their assets for the benefit of their creditors. Kind of complex, but it's a good definition. Bankruptcies are actually of ancient origin. Comes out of medieval Italy. The word has meaning. What does it mean? In ancient Italy, I shouldn't say ancient, medieval Italy, if you were a merchant and you didn't pay your debts, basically the head of the Chamber of Commerce would come and break up your business physically. They used to have benches that you would sit on to sell your wares. They would break the bench in half for public humiliation and let the whole world know, all your future creditors and the people who bought from you, that you were not a good credit risk. You didn't pay your debts. The word bankruptcy comes from these two Italian words, meaning banca, bench, and rata, to break it. Those two things created. So picture a guy in Italy and an axe to your bench. You say, oh, boy, I should have paid my bills. They break it in half, and guess what? You're bankrupt. That's where it came from. Okay? Okay. Our law comes from English common law. Under English common law, they borrowed the words, anglicized them, as those English tend to do, and it's now called bankrupt. Banca and rota came together. And under English law, not only would you have to pay your debts morally and legally, but it was also a crime. So if you didn't pay your debts, even if it was of no fault of your own, you know, a horrible storm came and wiped out all your inventory, one of your employees died, something that you didn't cause at all, you could go to debtor's prison in the event you didn't pay your bills. Okay? Debtor's prisons were widely used in England and even here in the United States. Okay? 7,000 people were in debtor's prison as late as 1829 in England. Okay? That's not that long ago in the history of law. Okay? Two things. It was a two-part test for bankruptcy. It was a civil proceeding and a criminal proceeding. If you were found bankrupt under English law, not only were you required to pay your debts, you were required to go to prison. So if you couldn't pay it, add insult to injury, you also went to jail. These jails were pretty yucky. And as a result, reforms were cried for. 1705, British Parliament passes the first statute. But notice, it's the first bankruptcy statute in England. It gives a right of discharge. That means it does away with your debts. Okay? But it still allows for incarceration. So they still put you in prison if you couldn't pay them. That's really a stupid idea in my mind. Because to be honest with you, where's the least likely chance that a guy is going to pay back his debts? If he's in prison, right? Apparently that escaped them under British common law. Kind of a surprise, but that's what they did. Sometimes their families would bail them out. By and large, particularly, it also left them as a scapegoat. Because what would happen is, if you owed a lot of money, you just went to jail. And a lot of famous people, actually, that you wouldn't kind of be surprised at, went to debtor's prison instead of paying off the debt. One of them was Robert Morris, who was known as the financier of the Revolution, immensely wealthy guy that lost everything out of land speculation after the Revolution. He was the guy who basically bankrolled George Washington throughout the Revolution. But after he lost all his money, he turned around and went to debtor's prison in the United States for several years trying to pay off the debts that he couldn't pay. Okay. 1849, Parliament works again. This time they come up with a concept of fault of the debtor. Was the debtor at fault? Was this a natural catastrophe that wiped it out and they discharged his debt? Or was this something he caused? Now, if you look at all these old statutes, particularly in the line of debtor's prison, the concept of limited liability for corporations becomes even more important because you don't want to invest in a business if it's going to send you to jail if it loses money. Right? So if you have a limited liability opportunity, baby, that's where you're going to go. 1869, the British finally enact something which is pretty much a modern bankruptcy code, but you still could be incarcerated up to 6 weeks. Many states actually still do this. Okay? What about the United States? United States, we were colonies of England. We followed English common law. So yes, even though we didn't like that issue of imprisoning debtors as much, we still did it. And in, just to give you an example, in Virginia there were three very famous debtors' prisons. And one of the people who went to that debtors' prison was Robert E. Lee's father, who was a commanding general in the Revolutionary War. His name was Light Horse Harry Lee. In 1830, up until 1833, these debtors' prisons were illegal. 1833, the federal government, the Congress, abolishes it under federal law. States still did maintain some, but by 1850, they were all wiped out. Okay? Okay. Now, as we said, first bankruptcy law in New York, in the United States, was passed in 1800 by Congress. It was a very bare bones statute. It applied only to merchants. Remember, that's where bankruptcy really started, and that's where your exposure really was. Remember that broken bench thing? That was merchants. Okay? Now, when you have the vast majority of citizens in the United States engaged in agriculture, that's what most people did for a living. Somehow, some way, their living was linked to agriculture. The merchant class was very small, very active, and very commercial. But most people were engaged in agriculture. As a result, this didn't really apply to them. Okay? Only applied to merchants. And it's kind of interesting to know a very large number of the founders and the people who ran for office in early America were a preponderance of merchants. That's unusual because most of the people were not them. You had exceptions. People like George Washington was an awesome farmer. But you had an awful lot more merchants in government than you did have in the general population. So it's not kind of surprising that this was put in there. Thomas Jefferson, like most things that John Adams did, didn't like the law. He had it repealed. The first Bankruptcy Act was only in place for 2 years. Okay? In the middle of their lives, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson had a humongous feud. They were best friends when they were younger. They were best friends when they were old men. But in the middle of their lives, they were about as far apart as they could. This was one of the casualties of the two of them. Okay? Because this was repealed, you went back to the British common law. Because that's what the states followed. So if there's no federal law on this, you go back to what the states had, and most of the states either codified or had in courts, common law, the British government. Okay. 1841 comes along, 41 years later, Congress again passes a Bankruptcy Act. This one comes closer to what they're doing in England. It allowed a debtor for the first time, not the creditors, but a debtor to file in bankruptcy. Okay? And it allowed for certain exclusions. You couldn't take the clothes off their back. It was broader than just merchants. And this law served as a template for future bankruptcy statutes. But this one, too, was repealed 2 years later. We didn't have a federal bankruptcy law again for 25 years after that. Okay? What happened? 1867, Civil War ends. Now, anytime you had a war, the economy was bounced up a little bit. And the economy during the Civil War, particularly because both sides were America, were fighting each other, the economy went way up. Economy in the South, obviously, after the war went down. But after the Civil War was over, there was a lot of reconstruction needed to be done in the South because we've been fighting with armies crossing over, millions of people fighting and hurling cannonballs and everything else there. There was a great economic crisis, one of the greatest in the history of the country. So Congress, in response, remember they ran back then too, not much different than today, decided they were going to do something to help the economy. So they passed a bankruptcy statute. Modernized it even further. Okay? What did this do? It was designed to be permanent. But guess what? It was repealed about 11 years later, but it still was designed to be permanent. Began a legislative template for modern bankruptcies. Allowed for both voluntary and involuntary. A voluntary bankruptcy is where the debtor files for protection. That's what voluntary is. The debtor, who's the one who owes the debt, asks the court, please protect me from all these evil creditors. Back then, they didn't have phone calls. They probably came to their house and knocked instead of calling you at 3 in the morning. Okay? It also allowed for involuntary bankruptcy. That means at least 3 creditors can come together and say, you owe me money, you got to pay me. So as a result of that, we can throw you into this bankruptcy. It allows for merchants, for the first time, individuals and corporations. Okay. It, more importantly than anything else, I think one of the reasons it passed, probably even more than the economic crisis is, Lincoln was martyred. He was murdered 2 years before that. And in his second inaugural address, which he gave in March 1865, just weeks before the war ended, he proposed to the country that we have to care for people who become destitute because of the war. That was in his... Matter of fact, if any of you go to the Lincoln Memorial, his second inaugural address is on one side... As you face Lincoln, it's on the right-hand side, Gettysburg Address on the left. Read it, because it talks about that. I think one of the reasons they passed this was because of what he said. Okay, it increased the exemption to $500 for clothes for your entire family. But as we said, it was repealed again 11 years later. But this set the standard for all future laws. Okay. Then comes 1898, another fiscal crisis. What a surprise to pass another bankruptcy. This one, however, lasts to the present day. It's got some amendments. And this is what our modern Bankruptcy Act is, our code, is structured off of. It allows for voluntary and involuntary filings. It eliminated the consent requirement for discharge. Previous law said, in order to discharge, wipe away the debts, the creditor had to agree. How much do you think that's going to happen? Under New York State law, you have the ability to collect sales tax, because it's held as a public trust, by the state pretty much forever against somebody. How often do you think that's waived? Almost never. Because they figure they can go after your great-great-grandkid. Okay? Similarly here, because you had to get creditor consent before this law passed, nobody ever got discharged. This said, let's take into consideration on it, now you don't need that. Okay? It allowed the states to set exemption rates. So, if you were living in Georgia, which was ravaged by the Civil War and had no economy, you could set your exemption rates to the fact that it only cost you $200 to buy a house there. If you lived in New York City, where a house was, say, $5,000, you could set your exemption rate higher. It allowed them to do that, taking into consideration the differences in economy in the country. Okay? For the first time, it established the concept of a trustee. In bankruptcy, after you file your petition, the court appoints a person to oversee the distribution and dissolution of all your assets. That person, who's supposedly an unbiased individual, is known as a trustee. Why do you think they call them?
Because
they're trusted, right? Because when you call a trustee, you trust the person, right? Okay, something like that. Okay. They want smart people, those legislators. Thinking all the time, right? A trustee will marshal your assets. That means if you have a bunch of wagons in your home, or lots of clothes, or some money, bank accounts, they'll bring them all together. And then they'll pay off your debts accordingly and leave you with whatever's exempted. That's the role of the trustee in this act in 1898. Came up with that concept. It also created for the first time federal bankruptcy courts. All the previous federal bankruptcy statutes were operated under state courts. For the first time now, in 1898, you started having federal bankruptcy courts. Their delegated authority about U.S. district courts, remember the federal court system goes U.S. district, Court of Appeals, then the Supreme Court. U.S. District Courts are the trial level court. They're right here in Albany if you ever want to see them. They're in the James P. Foley Courthouse, right downtown Albany on Broadway. That U.S. District Court also houses the Bankruptcy Court. Separate judges, also appointed by the President of the United States. Okay? They hear nothing but bankruptcy cases. Okay. Since the 1898 law, it remained into effect pretty much unchanged, with one exception. We'll get to that in a second. There was a Depression era change. But other than that, it pretty much remained into effect until the 1970s. Almost 100 years, 80 years. Okay? There was a change in the Depression. Earlier this year, we talked about the fact that I had a grandfather, I don't know if you remember, who, at the age of 21, was a multimillionaire. He was a clother. He owned a whole bunch of credit clothing stores. He and his brothers, he's one of 11. Big family, okay? So no, it's Irish. That's what we do. So he had a lot of brothers. They all owned clothing stores, and he opened up his, too. He was number 10 on 11. He was almost the caboose. Not quite, but almost. Okay? The Depression came along. He was born in 1888. And by the time of the Depression, he was in his 40s. Absolutely lost everything when he was brought into involuntary bankruptcy. He had paid his debts. Matter of fact, he was noted by the bankruptcy judge to be completely solvent. But because of the Depression, a lot of businesses wanted to get their money faster than you owed it. So one of the creditors of my grandfather paid off, that's it, but he did it, two other creditors to join him. And they filed and threw him into involuntary bankruptcy. Instantly, when you go into bankruptcy, your assets go down because you're not able to operate your business anymore because there's something known as the automatic stay. Everything gets frozen. So as a result of that, my grandfather lost everything. And because the way the exemptions were written in this 1898 law, they don't just take all the suits that you're selling or dresses that you're selling. They take your house. They take your car. They take your personal clothing, other than the $500 exemption that you have. So they took everything away from you. Now, the thing about this is, in 1938, my grandfather went into bankruptcy in 1936. Having lasted two more years, they changed those exemptions and said, you get a homestead exemption. Right now in New York State, it's $100,000 if you have a spouse. You have personal item exemptions. You know, they can't take the clothing you're wearing. Okay? Certain things were allowed. So in 1938, because of the Depression, so many people went into bankruptcy, they changed those exemptions. Other than that one change, this law pretty much lasted for 80 years. Now, you can see that since 1984, they started tinkering with it rather substantially. 84, 86, 90, 91, 1994, and then 2005. Of all these, and we're going to talk at length about the 2005 changes, they came about as a result of WorldCom and all the corporate scandals that occurred in the early 00s. Aside from those 2005 changes, you pretty much have almost identical to the 1898 statute. Not a lot of changes. Even though those amendments occurred, they really didn't have an effect. The 2005 law, which is known as the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act, did make rather significant changes to the code, and we'll talk about them. Okay? It basically placed more obligations on debtors to get a discharge, to try to get out of debt. And more obligations on creditors not to be too anxious to go after and throw somebody into bankruptcy. Okay. How is a bankruptcy declared? As we said, it's a federal court case in bankruptcy court pursuant to this section, Title 11 of the United States Code. An action, just like any other lawsuit, a lawsuit is started by filing a complaint. But in this case, it's started by filing a petition. It's a special kind of complaint. When you petition something in government, what are you doing? You're asking for their help, right? If I turn around and petition a redress, like they say in a constitution, I'm asking for help. Well, under this scenario, I'm asking for the help of the court. I'm asking as a debtor for their protection. As a creditor, if I were doing an involuntary bankruptcy, I'm asking for that debtor not to waste the assets that I might be able to recover. Okay? You're asking to set in motion this procedure. Okay? The parties are the debtors and the creditors. Usually only one debtor, but there can be more than one. Most of the time, there's multiple creditors. Because usually if you owe somebody money, you owe lots of people money. Okay? So usually there's multiple creditors. There are five different types of bankruptcies that you can engage in. One is Chapter 7. That's liquidation. That's where the court brings all your assets together, pays off all your debts, and all your debts that don't get paid off by all those assets are discharged. They're forgiven. It's a do-over with your credit. You marshal together, the trustee brings everything you have together, absent those exemptions we just talked about, puts them basically in a proverbial pot, pays off your creditors to the extent that they can. Usually it's pennies on the dollar. And then everything else gets discharged. Now, if you have student loans, you're still responsible for them. Certain other things, yeah. I'm sorry. I have to come up and see you. Not too long. And incidentally, that was done not just in the bankruptcy statute, it was also done in the student loans. And if you read your student loan forms, God bless you if you're reading all that fine micro.print, but if you read all of those, you will see in there in the contract, by the way, these aren't discharged in the bankruptcy, you can never get out from under them, and you got to pay them off, or else we're like, not throw you in debtor's prison, but do the proverbial and things like keep calling you the rest of your life. Okay? Chapter 9 is for municipalities. That actually has happened where a town, village, or city can go bankrupt. It is very unusual. And this chapter was added because there actually were several, and they were actually in Ohio, that did go bankrupt. Okay? School districts, incidentally, for what it's worth, just for giggles, are not entitled to bankruptcy protection. A school district is a municipality under the law, but they're exempt. Okay. Chapter 11, instead of liquidating and going bye-bye, is for businesses that say, you know, I got all this debt. Can we please just restructure it? Because I don't want to go out of business. Remember that wonderful business, Bob's Donuts? I know you're sick and tired of hearing that. I'm sorry. Last day that we probably thought about it too. That corporation is doing well. But I owe my supplier of sugar a ton of money. Okay? Because sugar prices spike. And donuts without sugar are too young. Okay? You know, I could put the squirm numbers up on there. So as a result of that, I owe this sugar supplier oodles of butts. And I can't continue to pay all my debts to the wheat supplier and the people who turn around and make the boxes that I put the donuts in and everything else if I'm going to pay them. So I can go into bankruptcy in Chapter 11 and pursuant to this protection under federal law, they can renegotiate the contract that I have with the sugar supplier. Now, they don't wipe away the debt. They can wipe away the portion. They genuinely don't do that. What they do is they say, okay, Bob, you owe the sugar supplier $1 million. And it's due next week. What we're going to do is say we're going to create a payment plan. You're going to pay that sugar supplier $100,000 a month for the next 10 months. Not way you can make it. Instead of having to pay them $1 million next year. Okay? They can do what is known as...
Can't just do that themselves?
I'm sorry?
Can't like a company just do that?
They can, but if you're that company that I owe $1 million to, do you want the money now or later, particularly if I'm in financial distress? If I can pay it, or if there's some way you can make me, and you don't care if I go out of business. I mean, if you can turn around and get that money from me, I mean, you got to feed your family too, right? So, generally, they don't do this voluntarily. Some companies who are smart will do that because they want to continue to sell their sugars, right? But, let's say you don't care, okay? You don't care, you want the money because your suppliers and your unions are going after you. So as a result of that, the court can turn around and say, you now have a payment plan over time. Okay? That's what Chapter 11 does. These things are called a cram down to the extent that they cram it down the throat, literally, of the person who is owed the money. Generally, it is extensions of time. Sometimes it's also cutting off some of the cost. If you have interest in the contract, sometimes they'll do away with that. Sometimes they'll do a portion. If the court turns around, the trustee recommends that a portion of the contract, actually, the dollars, he says, you know, you're making 400% on that sugar. You know, the average standard industry average is 100%. Okay? They'll turn around and say, guess what? Not only does he get 10 months to pay it off, but he only has to pay you $750,000, not the whole amount. Okay? That can be done. It can be done in bankruptcy because this is in the Constitution. Now, the Constitution says the federal government can't violate contracts. But this is an exception. This is where they actually can. Okay. Chapter 12 is also relatively recent. That's for family farms and fisheries. If you're a fisherman, off like, I don't know, where do fishermen go? I don't know. Louisiana, right?
A lot of fishermen in Louisiana. Bubba Shrimp Company.
Okay. They can take advantage of this section. And this section also has cram downs if they want to. It's got the whole host. Because we think agriculture and aquaculture, in this case too, is important for the success of America. So that individual section allows that. The last one is 13, chapter 13. That's for normal humans. Individual creditors. You turn around and get into a fix. And you don't want to turn around and wipe out all your debts. You want to be able to say, hey, listen, I want to pay these, but I can't pay them the way that they are. I'm underwater. They can do the cram downs that they can do in 11. They can renegotiate the amount that you have or the time frame that you pay. Under 13, you're allowed to do that. That's individual, basically, reorganization. And a lot of discharge in 13, too. It's not just the reorganization. They also discharge as well as cram. That's for normal humans, individual people. Okay. Under the three sections, you got chapter 7, you have a trustee. Chapter 11, you don't have a trustee. Why? Because it's a reorganization and you're just turning around and working with the court. You still have a judge, but you're working with the court to just reorganize. Okay? Who is eligible? Individuals are eligible under 7. Partnerships are eligible under 7, and corporations are under 13. It's only for individuals. Voluntary, you get all three. Involuntary, farmers and not-for-profits are not eligible under 7. Why are not-for-profits ineligible under 7? Anybody tell me? Because 7 liquidates everything. And you don't have anything in there. There's nothing to liquidate. There's no exposure on it. You're dealing with a not-for-profit. Okay? Chapter 11, a not-for-profit's nothing to reorganize. Okay? And chapter 13 does not have involuntary. Okay. How do you administer this? First, as we said, you file the petition. Then a trustee is generally appointed when you're talking about 7. You have a list of creditors. One of the things you have to provide in your petition is everybody you owe money to. If you don't put that person that you owe money to on this list of creditors, that debt doesn't get discharged. So you better make sure it's comprehensive because you want to have that debt go bye-bye. Okay? You have the collection of assets. It's called marshaling of assets. Then you have a meeting of the creditors. All the creditors get together and say, where are we in priority? Because certain creditors are above other creditors. Not all creditors are equal. Some get paid off first and get paid off more. Okay? Then you have the pursuant to that discussion, you have an evaluation of claims. Okay? Determine the priority. You sell off the assets with respect to the liquidation. And then every other debt you have, after everything's sold, the bankruptcy judge can discharge. Discharge means goes bye-bye. It's gone. Now, you can only file for bankruptcy once every 7 years. You can't do it every year. Can't get in trouble again and then do it. Okay? So, it's a period of time. And, once you go through bankruptcy, your credit's not very good. So it's unlikely you're going to end up turning around and getting in trouble the same way because nobody's going to give you money. Okay. There are official forms in the bankruptcy court. You have to use them. The bankruptcy court is governed under its own separate rules of civil procedure. They're called the rules of bankruptcy court as opposed to the federal rules of civil procedure. Each individual court, like each individual judge, has its own rules on how that court operates. Okay? Those individual court rules are not the same as the procedures. What those individual court rules say is, you know, every other Thursday in August we take off because we like to take it off and we're not going to tell you we're going to the races, but we're taking it off as a result of that in the court rules. Don't be surprised if there's those little tricky things. You can't make a motion on a Thursday when the track is gone. Okay? You go up to Saratoga, you see a lot of judges. Anyway. State courts can rule on bankruptcy issues. It's not exclusive jurisdiction, but it's almost never done. Because the protections are far greater for you as both a debtor and a creditor in federal court. Okay? There is a series of bankruptcy reporters that cite the case law, and you have all kinds of avenues for appeal throughout the federal courts. Okay. Now, as we said, liquidation, you can be voluntary or involuntary. An involuntary case is commenced by your creditors. There has to be at least three. There can be more than three, but under the law, there has to be at least three. So if you only have two creditors, they can't throw you into bankruptcy. Okay? And bankruptcy is not a great place to be thrown into. Okay? Because you lose control. One of the things that happens, we'll talk about this in a minute, is an automatic stay means everything gets frozen. So you no longer have access to your assets. So you don't want to be thrown into involuntary bankruptcy. At least if you voluntarily declare it, you can set up the ability to know when you can't get access to this stuff. Okay? If there's 12 or more creditors, at least three of whom are unsecured, must be $12,300 or more they to sign the involuntary. If there are fewer than 12, unsecured claim is at least 12-3, okay, to sign the petition. Chapter 7, we said again, is for you can also do it personally. You don't have to be the corporation. Corporations can do it, but you can also do it personally. It's liquidation. And this is the area that the 2005 amendments were most pernicious on. The most important thing about going into liquidation is this automatic stay. Bankruptcy wants to freeze things. Why? Because it does no good as a debtor or a creditor. Remember, bankruptcy exists for those two parties. If you're still ongoing the conduct that got you into this problem in the first place. Right? Don't either. So the first thing they do is called the automatic stay. So if you have all these assets, you can't sell them, you can't use them without permission of the bankruptcy court. The automatic stay is the first and biggest weapon in this bankruptcy proceeding. Okay? You need to give that list of creditors, not only who they are, but what they are owed and the transaction in which that occurred. If a creditor is secured, they're first in line. What is a secured creditor? It's a person who lends you money saying, if you don't pay me, I get to take the item that I lent you money to buy. So, with respect to a car, if I give you a car loan, I can take that car. Sorry? Do you guys have a question? I was on the Senate floor one day, standing right next to the lieutenant governor, on a very important bill, and I forgot to turn my cell phone off. And I'm standing about as far away from me and you as the microphone, with the entire Senate listening to my cell phone that sings a sting song into the microphone in the state senate. Now, had I not been there for 20 years, I may not have been there for 20 more minutes. Oops. Okay. In a bankruptcy, the trustee has all the powers of the owner. Why? He's the person, or she's the person, that marshals those assets together, can sell them, can liquidate them, can get rid of them, pay off everything. Okay. Voidable preferences and voidable transfers. This is a situation where if you give a preference to somebody, I pay you as a creditor before I pay you, that can be voided by the bankruptcy. They want everything frozen. They don't want preferences. They want you to stand in line where you are. And there's two ways to stand in line. One is if you're a secured or an unsecured creditor. So there's two lines there. Unsecured, get paid first. The second is the time of when the debt occurred. Okay? You have to show proof of claim. I can't just go up and say, hey, I'm a creditor. I really am. He owes me money. Well, prove it. Well, I can't. Well, guess what? If you can't prove it, you don't get to stand in line. Okay? You got to prove your claim. Priority of claims is where you stand in that line. Okay? All determined by that wonderful guy, the trustee. Proof of claim must be filed within 90 days of the time that the petition is filing. What happens, however, if you don't know about the bankruptcy petition? That can be a problem. Well, that's the reason why you're required as a debtor to list your creditors. Because the court notifies you based upon that list. It's also the reason why they don't allow a discharge if you don't put somebody on that list. You can't just say, oops, I forgot. Why? Because that creditor never got to stand in line. You prejudice that creditor. It's the snooze you lose rule. You better list everybody or else you don't get the forgiveness that you're entitled to. Okay? Because they have obligations under the bankruptcy law to be able to prove their claim and to tell where they are in the priority. Okay. Unsecured claims are paid in this order. Number one, administrative expenses. Number two, claims in the ordinary course of the debtor's business. So if I'm turning around and I'm buying sugar from you, guess what? That's a claim in the ordinary course of my business. Wage claims. Obviously, we want to take care of our employees. Contributions to employee benefit plans. claims to consumer creditors, my phone bill, certain taxes, and then general creditors, everybody else. Okay? What are your debtor's duties? You got to list the creditors, debts, and assets. Okay? List of exemptions and debtor's protection against discrimination. What's the discharge? The discharge is after all these assets are marshaled together and sold off. It's what debts are left remaining. You pay off the secured creditors as close as you can to their value. Then you pay off the unsecured creditors. They're only getting 70 cents on the dollar. And then you have the remaining debt that's out there that you owe. The discharge wipes away that debt. It's expunged. It's gone forever. Never to be returned. That's what the discharge does. Takes away all that you owe that has not been paid off. Okay? Again, what are some of the exemptions? Income tax. Federal government writes this. They say, can't do it. Student loans. Anytime you use fraud, guess what? That doesn't do it. Alimony. You turn around and marry a bum husband and give him the gate. Guess what? That alimony doesn't get discharged. Because otherwise, a lot of people would be filing for bankruptcy, claiming that they don't have to pay. Okay? Intentional torts. If I beat somebody up and I have to pay for them, guess what? That is not dischargeable. Okay. We talked about 11. This is the reorganization plan. This is for corporations. I try to get the business back onto a footing by doing a cram down, reorganizing my debts. This does not always work. Because usually when a business is going south, it's hard just to fix one or two things to make it go back on board. Okay? What happens is 11s all too frequently are converted into 7s. They start out as reorganizations and end up as liquidations. Some of them are a success. Some of them are. We have Sears and Roebuck went into Chapter 11, came back out. And you had some big businesses out there have done it. But it's unusual. Okay, doesn't happen a lot. This is the plan for reorganization. You've got to file a plan with the court. How am I going to get this business back in solvency status where I'm going to be able to not only pay off the creditors that I owe right now, but be able to have an ongoing business? If the court does not believe that you can turn around this business with this plan, they will not grant a Chapter 11 reorganization and will convert you into a 7. 13, that's when you owe a whole lot of money to a whole lot of people as a person, as an individual, and file for individual bankruptcy. It's a lot easier to file for a 13 and a lot less expensive, the fees are less, to file for a Chapter 13. This is the cram down. They'll turn around and take all your debts and come up with a payment plan to basically extend them. Okay. What do the parties want? Debtors want their debts discharged. They want to get out from underneath this mountain of debt. That's why they file if they do it. They want to preserve as many assets as they can, either through exemption or by paying off their debt and having something left. What do the creditors want? They want to maximize the distribution of the creditors, keep the debtor honest, okay, and discharge only dischargeable debts and get as much money out of those assets as they can. That's what they want. They want to get paid. What does the bankruptcy code want? What's the fundamental purpose of the bankruptcy code under federal policy? It wants to give honest debtors who didn't go south on purpose to return to productivity, to be a contributing, honest member of society. They want them free from manageable debt. Okay? They want them to be able to pay their obligations. They want to promote the best interests of creditors and be able to still have the free flow of credit. You don't want to be too hard on creditors. Because if you are, they're not going to continue to offer credit to people. And that's an important thing. You want to get credit. We saw that in this financial crisis. And on a lot of things, both the federal and the state government came down hard on creditors because they were going after normal humans. But at the end of the day, it's a balancing test. You don't want to have predatory creditors, but you also want to be able to have people in the credit business offering credit to people who need it. So you got to weigh those two things. Bankruptcy tries to do that. Any questions? I have a question of the day, which will be fun. Worth 3 points to anybody who can answer.
A couple of years ago, Congress passed and the President signed. By the way, Anthony, before I forget, I need to see you after class. A health care bill in Washington, proverbially known as Obamacare. It is 2,800 pages long, rather lengthy statute. Who can tell me the official name of that statute? If you can, you get 3 points.
Affordable Care Act.
Sorry?
Affordable Care Act.
That's part of it. You missed the first two words. That's the last three words.
What is it?
Affordable Care Act. There's two words before
it.
Healthcare. Okay.
Bingo! Guess what? You both get 2 points. How's that?
You got a bunch of points coming in. Hey, you're here?
Yeah, I did.
Good boy. You going? Good boy, probably. Thank you. Before you leave, remember, extra credit due next week. Okay?